Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
Welcome to the March 1st edition of IMC Radio News. The views and opinions are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. I'm Sandra Otten, your host for the next half hour. Our feature, written and produced by Ariel Clemenzi, focuses on recent developments in women's healthcare rights. We'll also be featuring a poem by local poet Matthew Murray, as published in the March edition of the Progressive magazine, and Citizens Speak, commentary by Ben Grosser. But first, these headlines. The Champaign City Council is considering purchasing tasers or stun guns. Tasers shoot electric darts that deliver a charge that immobilizes a suspect. They are being marketed as a way to prevent injury to officers and suspects. But some groups of activists worry that they will be used against them when they protest. In addition, Tracy Parsons, president of the Urban League of Champaign County, strongly objects to the City Council spending $29,949 in federal law enforcement block grant funds to buy the 25 X26 tasers for the police department, questioning the need for the types of these devices in our community. Petitions are circulating to stop the purchase of these stun guns, and you can sign a petition by going to the Urban League at 314 South Neal. You can get more information from them by calling 356-1364. In addition, you are urged to write and call the mayor and the Champaign City Council members. On March 6th and 7th, Amnesty International is sponsoring a program called Local Solutions to Global Problems. It was organized in order to inform the Champaign-Urbana community about human rights. They believe that everyone is in the possession of basic human rights, such as food, health, work, property, education, civic involvement, and religious and traditional customs. These rights are often overlooked in many public designs made today in the areas of political and business, as well as in many personal choices. They wish to inform the local community about abuses and threats against such rights so that they may be prepared to be a responsible and informed citizen of our area and the world. The speakers for the event include Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UIUC Belton Fields, the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, the Mexico Solidarity Network, and Global Exchange documentary film maker Paul Hickson, Molly Gina of Amnesty International, Mark Weisbrot of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, Professor of Sociology, UIUC, Michael Goldman. It's a two-day conference covering local, national, and international issues. It takes place on March 6th from 9 to 4:30 and March 7th from 10 to 3 p.m. It's held at the University YMCA on campus in Champaign. Urbana City Schools are preparing to make budget cuts that could add up to $1 million this year. School Board President Joe Hudson says that because of the No Child Left Behind mandates and the tax caps that cost $800,000 this year, and because they don't know how teachers' contracts will bear out, they're going to have to look at cutting up to $1 million and more. They're also looking at revenue enhancements, such as increasing the per student cost of driver's education from $50 to $200 and increasing student athletic participation fees. But these are some of the possible cuts cuts that they're looking at. Strings and bands in fifth grade, 42,000. American Reads, American Counts, site coordinators, 18,000. The English as second language in peer mediation positions at Urbana High School, 100,000. Secondary supervisors on buses, halls, lunch, and before after school programs and other locations, 112,000. One day of work week in the summer for central office staff, 105,000. Library material and film dollars, 11,000. Elementary lunchroom supervisors, 20,000. Urbana Middle School Summer Academy, 30,000. A volunteer mentor coordinator, 35,000. District library clerks, 40,000. Young achievers, 40,000. Public relations positions, 43,000. Parent liaison positions, 69,000. Reduction in librarian schedule, 84,000. Secondary student relations supervisor, 112,000. Winter and spring employment for a 12-month staff, 121,000. Social workers and psychologists, 185,000. The source was the Urbana School District's report. The Federal Communications Commission released a major report concerning its low-power FM radio service. In what could be a victory for those advocating for more access and open media, the FCC is making its recommendation to Congress that they remove the third adjacent frequency restrictions that keep low-power FM radio out of most American communities, especially out of our cities. This act will open the doors to hundreds, if not thousands of new potential community radio stations in the United States, according to the Prometheus Radio Project. The original granting of licenses for the low-power FM service was stopped in its tracks in December of 2000 when Congress, under the recommendations of the National Association of Broadcasters and NPR, placed an exorbitant protection standard on the FM broadcast band. Convinced by the corporation's cries of interference, Congress passed a law keeping low-power radio off of most of its intended frequencies, and over 60% of the potential stations were lost. In Urbana, there will be a new low-power FM station operating as WRFU 104.5. The Socialist Forum was recently granted the license for the low-power FM station. They're holding regular meetings to organize the station on the first and third Tuesdays of the month at 8 p.m. at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. On February 27th, Urbana city officials announced an initiative to improve the city's downtown. It's called Build Urbana. It's part of a six-part plan that consists of six goals with accompanying action items to be accomplished. In large part, this was put together by Laura Huth, Democrat from Ward 5, and Danielle Chenoweth, Democrat from Ward 4. The plan includes six overall goals, including increasing and promoting investment in downtown and promoting visible outdoor activity. Chenoweth, as quoted in the News Gazette, states, "This is an action plan, not a talking plan. It was developed in conjunction with city council members, the mayor, and staff. Because it's a consensus document, it has the strength of being able to move on all fronts together." The six goals for Build Downtown are: promote investment in downtown Urbana, make it easier to start or grow a business in downtown Urbana, promote visible outdoor activity in downtown Urbana, improve the ability to find, travel, and park in downtown Urbana, bring visibility to current and future downtown development, and implement the downtown strategic plan, which was developed in 2002. And now, Citizens Speak. This week, we are featuring commentary by Ben Grosser. Ben blogs at www.criticalviewer.com. If you'd like to participate in Citizens Speaks, call at 384-8820 and leave a message for Sandra. Or email us at radio@ucimc.org.
February 24th, 2004. The U.S. needs a divorce from Bush. Well, it's happened. Bush tossed his big ugly hat into the ring and joined the extremist chorus of people clamoring to inscribe blatant discrimination into the U.S. Constitution. He claimed an overwhelming consensus in our country for protecting the institution of marriage. Well, he's right. I overwhelmingly support protection of marriage from becoming a stigma of discrimination. In fact, the rest of the country also agrees with me, according to new polling data. Perhaps more depressing than this expected move by our idiot president is the absence of a loud, clear-cut outrage from Kerry or Edwards. Kerry did issue a statement saying he would vote against such an amendment, but he still insists marriage is between a man and a woman, and that marriage should be left to the states. Edwards has no formal statement on the subject on his website, but said today that he doesn't personally support gay marriage myself, and that it's for the states to decide. This is the best the Democrats can do? Leave it to the states? You know, this issue illustrates one of the reasons that so many people like Bush, beyond the total and complete propaganda that panders to them, that is. He makes a decision and sticks with it. He's not afraid of it. He says, I think this is wrong, and I'm going to keep saying I think it's wrong, and I'm going to say everyone who disagrees with me is wrong. Now, he does happen to be wrong most of the time, but so are a lot of people, and I think those people tend to appreciate someone else sticking with their convictions. Even though this attitude has led the president to certain trouble, for example on weapons of mass destruction, tax cuts, jobs, etc., people still respect it. The Democrats have been doing so well for the last few weeks. They haven't backed down, and they've been calling everything as they see it. Today was a perfect opportunity for Kerry to step forward and say something like this. Today, the President of the United States urged the country to endorse a rewrite of the Constitution that inscribes discrimination into the founding law of the land. Perhaps he should cross out a few lines in the Declaration of Independence while he's at it, so that it says, all men are created equal as long as they only want to marry women. He didn't say this, of course, but can you imagine if he had? People would respect this. They would react to it. They would see someone who stepped up, wasn't afraid of saying how they felt, and who called things as they saw them. No question that the U.S. needs a divorce from Bush, but today I'm not too encouraged about our upcoming engagement to Kerry or Edwards.
Matthew Murray, Urbana poet, recently, this month, had a poem published in the Progressive magazine. The title of the poem is The Exchange, Oaxaca, Mexico. Matt introduces the poem.
I wrote this poem based on a trip I took to Mexico back in the 80s. There's a reference to Tenochtitlan, which was the capital, the major city of the Aztecs, and it was the city over which the conquest was fought by Cortez and the defenders of Tenochtitlan. And it's, of course, now where Mexico City sits on what was Tenochtitlan. What I was trying to do is just talk about some of the issues of coming from a country that's seen as very rich. And even if you're a tourist, when at the time I was a student, didn't have a lot of money, but it was seen as a very rich person. And it was during the period when our government was involved in really some of the most horrific human rights atrocities being committed in Central America. And so the reference to white handprints was the marks of the death squads in El Salvador. They used to put a white handprint on whoever they were either had killed or were going to kill. And just this sort of struggling with these images of other and not other, and images of color, of white and dark and brown and white, and the foreigner, the gifts, how we buy ourselves off sometimes and don't. The Exchange, Oaxaca, Mexico. It begins with an epigram. They placed them on some rather narrow stones which had been prepared as places for sacrifice, and with stone knives they sawed open their chests and drew out their palpitating hearts. That's written by Bernal Diaz del Castillo from his book The Discovery and Conquest of Mexico, told, of course, from the Spaniards' point of view. The Exchange. It is a simple story. I'm in Mexico drinking hot milk with coffee when a girl comes to my table with gardenias to sell. A simple story. Shoeless, maybe 6 years old, she holds out her hand. Please buy it, mister. 50 pesos, not even a dime, for one gardenia which I buy. The meeting, the exchange, the terms for peace. At this table in the plaza, in the surf of that first island, Columbus's trinity of ships anchored against the sky, at the gates of Tenochtitlan, Montezuma trying to appease Cortez with a moon made of silver and a sun of hammered gold, just enough to keep his hot greed glowing. It is a simple story. In my hand, money. In hers, a flower. White handprints of death on doors, hands brown as coffee with milk, the bitter and the sweet. It is a story of looks exchanged. There in the plaza, my eyes blue as the horizon of the 16th century, her eyes black as the scalloped edge of the stone knife held ready to saw open the chest. A simple story. One white gardenia bought, and the living rose beneath my ribs, beating and beating, scathed, unscathed.
Matthew Murray reading his poem The Exchange, as published in the March issue of the Progressive magazine. Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
And now for our feature presentation, written and produced by Ariel Clemenzi, focusing on recent developments in women's healthcare rights.
On January 1st, 2004, the Illinois House Bill 211, known as Contraceptive Equity and Health Insurance, went into effect. The new legislation requires Illinois health insurance plans who provide prescription coverage to also cover prescription contraceptive devices, such as the pill, the patch, the ring, the diaphragm, Depo-Provera, and emergency contraception. The legislation was fought for by the Women's Health Task Force, which is made up primarily of local organizations, such as the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers and Planned Parenthood of East Central Illinois, to name only two of the more than 30 member organizations. Women across the state celebrated this victory, and it is a testimony to the power of grassroots organizing campaigns. I talked with Brooke Anderson of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, one of the lead organizers of the effort to pass this legislation, about the campaign, its successes, its shortcomings, and where the movement for women's rights in healthcare is heading now. Brooke, you were one of the leaders of this very successful grassroots campaign. I'm wondering, how did this movement build, and what was the catalyst behind it?
We were getting a lot of calls into our hotline from women who were saying, you know, I don't understand why I'm having to pay $30, $35 a month for my prescription contraception when I have prescription coverage. And particularly some women were saying, well, this isn't even something I'm using for contraception. It's been prescribed to help with endometriosis or other conditions, and therefore I need it like I would need penicillin. It has nothing to do with contraception in my particular case. Why do I have to pay so much for this? And so we were really hearing this from the ground up. Women were really upset about this and looking to do something. And so we brought together as many of the individual women who we knew were being affected by this, as well as other women's rights and healthcare groups here in Champaign County, and got together and said, what can we do about this at a local level? And that's really how it began, was women who were upset when they went to the pharmacy that they were having to pay so much, then getting together and organizing and trying to figure out how to solve this. They weren't content just to be paying $35 a month for this, because part of what we're hearing women say is that if I'm paying this much per month, that adds up to about $500-$600 a year sometimes, and that's a whole paycheck for me. And that means that by having to pay for these pills, this is taking a pay cut from what women, of course, already, what do we make? It's like 68 cents on the dollar, 70 or something like that. We're already not making as much for men, but then to have to be paying more for our health care, that's not right. And there are national studies that show that women overall pay 68% more out of pocket for their health care costs than men do. And this isn't because of the myth that women go to the doctor more. It's because reproductive and sexual health needs are not covered in health insurance plans the way that other things do. And those are needs that mostly pertain to women.
Because women's health needs are so often overlooked by lawmakers, were you at all surprised when this legislation did pass?
Honestly, I actually didn't think we would get the kind of success that we had, even at our local and statewide campaign, in such short amount of time. But one of the things that we're finding, I feel like we're having some of the same struggles for our generation as women who fought for Roe v. Wade are now having. You know, you can get legislation passed, or you can have Supreme Court decisions that, in the law, outline specific rights for women, but in the kind of climate that we have here in the United States, where you have legislatures and private organizations and whatnot chipping away at the very scope of the law, there are so many states now passing laws in the United States to infringe upon a woman's right to choose. So, for instance, requiring parental notification or a 24-hour waiting period or whatnot. They're really chipping away at women's rights to choose. The same thing may happen with contraceptive coverage, where, you know, we got a law passed, women should have it, but they still find themselves oftentimes without it because there are so many different things being introduced to try to limit the scope of contraceptive coverage. And we see that happening in other states that had previously passed contraceptive coverage, as you see legislation introduced to try to narrow the scope of it, or you see it being challenged in the courts and whatnot. And so what we have to do is really fight to make sure what we won actually produces the results that we had intended for when fighting for it. So we're going to make sure that this isn't something that more and more health insurance providers find a way out of providing. We want to make sure that not only does the scope of this legislation not narrow, but that we actually expand it into federal legislation.
The Women's Health Task Force began work on this campaign in 2001, but it wasn't until 2003 that this legislation passed. With so much community support behind this initiative, why did it take so long to pass? What were some of the roadblocks that you all faced?
In the campaign, we really saw that big businesses such as Prevena Covenant here in our community put the full weight of their power into opposing this legislation because they didn't want to see it passed and they felt it wasn't in their best interest, which isn't true to start with. But it was really sad to see some of our politicians really incurring favor with these big businesses in their community, voting against the interests of their own constituents. And what was so frustrating in particular about seeing Prevena oppose this legislation was that they're a healthcare provider. Why wouldn't they want to be able to offer this? It's the same problem that we have now where, even though this legislation has passed, Carle Clinic and Carle Foundation Hospital are refusing to provide contraceptive coverage to their employees because they say that they're a self-insured organization and that self-insured organizations aren't covered by state law, which is correct. They're covered by federal law, and there's no federal legislation requiring contraceptive coverage. So Carle Clinic and Carle Foundation Hospital aren't going to be providing contraceptive coverage to their employees.
As you mentioned, the law provides exemptions for businesses that are self-insured, but it also provides exemptions for businesses that aren't based in Illinois and for insurance companies with any religious objection to providing contraception. And as you illustrated with the Carle example, some local organizations are exploiting these loopholes. Had there been any indication in that lag time between when the law passed, May 16th of last year, and when it actually went into effect of January 1st of this year, that corporations would be exploiting these loopholes?
It wasn't until it got close to the enactment date of the legislation that women started contacting their employers and asking, okay, January 1st, the date of this legislation being effective, is coming up soon. When will my pills be covered come January 1st? And so it wasn't until late November or December of the past year that we started hearing reports back from women who had contacted their employers that these particular employers were not going to be providing this coverage. And that's when we really started getting worried about this. And we really sort of had to turn our campaign into high gear again to make sure that corporations knew that this legislation had passed. I want to go back and be careful about how I talk about this, because the legislation requires insurance providers, but not employers, to provide contraceptive coverage in their health care plans. And it only is a requirement on health insurance plans that already have prescription coverage. So, for instance, it doesn't say flat out that insurance providers have to provide contraceptive coverage. It's only if a health insurance plan, and most do, has prescription coverage. It cannot exclude prescription contraceptives from that coverage. At the same time, there are many employers who are also insurers, and so we're also looking at employers and whether or not they're complying with the law.
And what are your findings so far?
So far, we're finding that a lot of health insurance plans are complying with the law. We're finding that some are not, and that's very concerning. Some are also delaying implementation of this law. So, for instance, even though the law became effective January 1st, the law has a clause that makes it possible for an insurance provider to delay providing this coverage until their contract for health insurance renews. So, for instance, Personal Care HMO and Health Alliance have a contract with the state of Illinois to provide health insurance for University of Illinois employees as state employees. Their contract with the state does not renew until July 1st. Therefore, the law allows Personal Care and Health Alliance to wait until July 1st to implement contraceptive coverage. And so we're finding that a lot of health insurance providers are planning on complying but are waiting to comply until their contract renews. So if you find yourself in at a workplace that should have contraceptive coverage but you don't have it yet, some of the questions that you need to ask are, when does the contract renew? You also need to find out if your health insurance provider fits within any of the exemptions in the law.
Similar laws have been passed in other states, but many of those also have exemptions, and there's still the issue that there's no federal legislation requiring contraceptive coverage. Does this mean that many women in the country are still left to face discrimination in their healthcare coverage?
Exactly. One of the big lessons that we learned from this campaign is that even though we can pass legislation in the state of Illinois requiring contraceptive coverage, because there are so many corporations in our nation today that have such a stronghold on workplaces in our community, we really need federal legislation right now that mandates contraceptive coverage. The federal government passed legislation that requires contraceptive coverage for federal employees, so for instance, like postal workers, but there's currently no federal legislation requiring every health insurance plan in the United States to offer contraceptive coverage. And so part of what we may end up doing is fighting for federal contraceptive coverage legislation. And what's exciting about this is on this past anniversary of Roe v. Wade, a lot of national women's rights organizations introduced legislation called FOCA. It's the Freedom of Choice Act. And what this legislation would do, it does a lot of things in terms of guaranteeing women's rights to choose. But one of the other things that this law does is it would mandate federal contraceptive coverage. So it would require that every health insurance plan in the United States cover prescription contraceptives. And we really believe that this is the next logical step for our campaign, is looking at supporting this kind of federal legislation.
That was local community activist and organizer Brooke Anderson of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers speaking on the recent developments in women's healthcare rights since the passage of Illinois Bill 211. The Freedom of Choice Act she mentioned was introduced on January 22nd of this year by the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Planned Parenthood's president, Gloria Felt, said that FOCA would, quote, restore reproductive rights that were recognized in the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision before legislatures and courts had eroded these rights, end quote. On a local level, it would mean that grassroots organizers would not have to go from employer to employer or even from state to state fighting for women's health rights. Its passage, and thus the quality and comprehensiveness of women's health care, both locally and across the country, depends in large part on grassroots efforts as well as the presidential administration that is in office after this next election. If it is true, as Frederick Douglass said in 1857, that power concedes nothing without a demand, then surely as this next election approaches, it is the perfect time for us to make clear our demands. For IMC Radio News, this is Arielle Clemenzi.
For IMC Radio News, this has been Sandra Auten. The show was written and produced by myself, except for the piece by Ariel Clemenzi. Thank you, Ariel. Production assistance was given to me by Paul Kotheimer this week, and the music was performed by Doyle Dykes from his CD Guitars 2000. If you'd like to be involved in IMC Radio News, we'd love to have your contributions and suggestions. You can email us at radio@ucimc.org or come to our meeting at the IMC on Tuesday nights at 5:30. The address is 218 West Main Street in Urbana. Have a good evening.